Good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, April the 5th, 2018, 4518, 14 coming up on 15 minutes past the hour. You are tuned into the Now program. Scott Spears along with you for the ride today. Now, I want to give you some housekeeping hints here before we get to our guest this hour, which is going to be a lot of fun. Next hour, coming up here on WWGH Radio at 1:10, we are going to be joined by Jody Serling. Jody Serling is the daughter of the creator of the Twilight Zone, Rod Serling. And as many of you know, Rod Serling went to Antioch College here in Ohio and also spent some time in the 1950s at the radio station here in Marion, writing and doing things of that nature. So Jody Serling remembers her father, Twilight Zone creator Rod Serling, next hour here on the program. And we just got this news this morning that coming up on Tuesday, April the 17th, a little under 2 weeks away, from 5:10 to 6 p.m. here in the WWGH studio, we will have Democratic frontrunner for governor Dennis Kucinich, former representative here in Ohio, also former presidential candidate in a primary, former Fox News contributor, Dennis Kucinich, currently running in the Democratic primary for governor. He's the front runner right there with Rich Cordray. He will be live in studio here in the studio 5:15 to 6 p.m. on April the 17th. And he'll be taking your phone calls, 740-383-9944 at that time. And if you want an email a question before April the 17th, you can do that by sending it to me at scott@wwgh1071.com. And we will ask Representative Kucinich that question live on the air when he is here. Now, this hour, one of my favorite guests. He's been on the program countless times. The last time he was on, we only had about 15 minutes, so this time we cleared the slate for the rest of the hour because there's so much going on in the world politically and in general. There is nobody better to talk to than the father of conservative talk radio. Had there not been this man, there would not have been Rush Limbaugh, there would not have been Sean Hannity, there would not have been Glenn Beck. He is the guy who started opinion-based radio when it came to the political realm. It's always a pleasure to welcome to these microphones Barry Farber. Barry, how are you?
Scott, I am fine, and I can't tell you how exciting it is for me to be on the air with somebody that closely related to Rod Serling. You're going to have a fantastic afternoon once you get rid of me.
No, I think the fantastic afternoon starts with you, and then we move on. Yeah, but that'll be an interesting conversation next hour. Dennis Kucinich coming to the studio here April the 17th. What do you make of Kucinich?
Well, I always keep calm when we deal with political prodigies. You know, Bobby Fischer was a chess prodigy. Mozart was a musical. Dennis Kucinich was a political prodigy. I mean, I think he was mayor of, what was it, Cincinnati?
Cleveland.
When he was in his teens, it seems. He's always been elected. didn't make it for president, but a lot of them don't make it for president. And I think his heart's in the right place. But Scott, he has shown me no independence from the disastrous, self-destructive Democratic Party line. It is a party bereft of what parties need, namely a message and a messenger. I'm watching. I'm listening. I'm waiting. I would vote for Dennis Kucinich if he had a message and belted it out. What is his message?
Well, one of the reasons he has tied up with Rich Cordray here in the Democratic primary. He was behind a few weeks ago. Now they're tied at 21%. One of the reasons is he is for banning the AR-15 here in Ohio, and that really helped him because Rich Cordray, also on the Democratic side, has an A rating from the NRA, and they've really been hitting him with that in the primary, and it has caused Kucinich to rise up to tie him with about a month to go.
Well, you touched the one sore spot with me and firearms, because I am straight, right, I'm orthodox in NRA. I buy their act completely, except for that weapon you mentioned. The AR, whatever it is. I am totally in favor of the Second Amendment, but I do not see the utility for hunting, for self-protection. What is the... Maybe you can brief me. What does the NRA say about that kind of assault weapons? What, except for the thrill of firing them, I trained one day with the Israeli army in Israel. And, I mean, there is a little excitement when you take an Uzi, very light, beautiful weapon, and you raise it up and you pull that trigger and you feel like you're the most powerful person on earth. But that is not worth the damage that that particular weapon does. So I guess I'm kind of worthless to the NRA if I don't buy that part of their program, and I do not buy that part of their program, but I buy every other part.
Do you think that groups like the NRA, and there are other groups, do you think something would have been done before now if they weren't such a strong and powerful lobby? I mean, here in Ohio, Rich Cordray's a Democrat, and they, I think... I don't know why he has an A rating. Why does the NRA even rate candidates? That blows my mind.
Well, they use that as their tactic. That's the bait. You go ahead and give us the praise that we crave. And I don't mean to sound negative. I sound like an anti-NRA. I am definitely not. But I understand how they woo candidates with the ratings and in certain areas. Somebody who gets that much support from the NRA really has a head start. But may I just end the argument right now? Yeah, I mean, I don't mean that literally. What I mean is I'm going to give you the one point that is never mentioned that I think effectively, emphatically ends the argument. Let's say you wanted to ban cherries, you know, the fruit. Cherries. You could ban cherries. You know where the orchards are. You know who the fruit brokers are. You know big chains of supermarkets. You can do everything and you can ban cherries. Now, the skeptic will say, what about all the cherries that are already out there in private homes, in cafeterias, in restaurants? What are you going to do about those cherries? The answer is we're going to wait 4 days, and they'll rot. Guns don't rot. When my wife moved from California to be my wife here in New York, the moving people stole one of her most precious heirlooms, her great-grandfather's pistol from the Civil War. That pistol could still kill somebody. So I think the end of the argument is the following sentence. What are you, okay, ban this, ban that, ban the other. What are you going to do about the millions of guns already out there? You've got to look elsewhere for a cure. And my favorite cure is creating an atmosphere in which the expectation is the victim is no longer a passive, terror-stricken, vulnerable victim. Let there be armed victims who know how to use those weapons, and let the word go forth. We are no longer the easy targets that we used to be. I see that as the only way to militate against the damage caused by guns.
Barry, this is interesting because the question is, what you just said is very true, and that usually is where people go, that if people want them, they're going to get them. But in this country, you cannot drive until you're 16 years of age. You cannot gamble until you're 18. You cannot drink until you're 21. You cannot drive without car insurance in Ohio, period, at any age. And you cannot text while driving. That's a first offense if you're under 18, and it's a secondary offense if you're over 18. Now, we're not eliminating alcohol. We're not eliminating cars. We're not eliminating cell phones. We're not eliminating lottery tickets. But we do have safeguards in place. Now, are people still going to break the law? Yeah, they're still going to break the law, but there's penalties for the people selling those things to underage people. There's penalties for parents. There's penalties for law-abiding people. Murder has never stopped in this country. We've had murder from day one, but we don't make it legal.
Are you aware, Scott, that the highest casualty rate of any strike against students had nothing to do with guns, and that's why you never hear about it? I don't like the propaganda alignment of the anti-gun people. The highest number of casualties, it was back in the 1920s, this malcontent made a bomb, a very effective bomb, and killed more students than anything that we know about recently. If he had only done it with guns, he would be as notorious as the others. But he did not use guns, so he is of no interest to the anti-gun forces. I don't admire that.
One of the issues, and then I think we'll get past this, but one of the issues is, and it's always puzzled me, is if you read the Bill of Rights, and I don't have it in front of me, but essentially the Second Amendment states the people shall have the right to bear arms to maintain a well-regulated militia. That's what it says. Now, what's curious about that to me is that has been translated down through time to mean every person shall have the right to carry a gun. Now, I don't think the framers of the Constitution were dumb people. And what is curious to me about the wording of that is that if you go down to the Fifth Amendment, it says no person, and I'm paraphrasing, no person accused of a crime shall be convicted unless they face a jury of their own peers. They use the word person. They say no person. This was written the same time the Second Amendment was written, but they don't say every person shall have the right to bear arms. They say the people. And the people would refer to a group of people. If they meant every person, much like they did in the Fifth Amendment, why didn't they say every person?
Well, Scott, that is not without its rhetorical appeal. to those who simply hate firearms, and I certainly understand that feeling. But let's take a look around the world, which is never, never done by the anti-gun people. In Switzerland, it is compulsory to have what you would call a well-regulated militia. Before World War One, the German Kaiser Wilhelm, visited Switzerland and watched the army maneuvers. And afterwards, he said to the Swiss general, "You have a very effective army of 500,000 men. What will you do if I attack you with 1,000,000 men?" And the Swiss general said, "We would each shoot twice." The gun is part of the basic furniture of the Swiss home. I don't bomb schools, but I love to break up dinner parties with rhetoric. And a couple of years ago, I got a good one. The people were talking about the danger of picking up hitchhikers because the hitchhiker might have a gun. And I took another sip of wine and wiped my mouth with the high-class damask napkin. And I said, "You know, this is interesting to me. I will not pick up a hitchhiker unless I am sure he has a gun." Back to Israel. The way Israeli troops travel when they're on their own, weekend pass or whatever, they stand at bus stops all over the country, and drivers pick them up. So I stopped at, I don't even speak Hebrew that well, but I stopped at the bus stop. Three people get in the back, young men and young women with their Uzis, and I take them where they want to go, if they're going my way. Have you ever heard of a Swiss school being shot up or an Israeli school? When the victim is no longer such a helpless victim, you're on your road to common sense. You're on your road to a cure.
It'll be interesting to see what comes out here. And I thought one of the most interesting points of the shooting in Florida was that they did have an armed, retired police officer who knew what was going on, who never entered the building.
Well, there was an old joke about Jewish people being afraid to fight. Israel sort of put a damper on that joke. I forget how the joke went, but a captain saw a soldier running as fast as he could away from the battle, and the captain said, "You're running the wrong way. Turn around. The war's that way." And the Jewish soldier says, "Come on, man, you can get killed up there." The notion of being killed for doing your job is not appealing. I sympathize with those people, and I'll go to my grave wondering how I would have reacted. I was in the U.S. Army. I was never in combat. I had a desk job in Washington. But I'm ready to vote no on those people. They're worthless militarily. They're worthless in our society when it comes to protecting young students. But who can be mean to them? They're human. They are afraid of gunfire. That can be cured with a little training. The Army trained you so that you instinctively run toward the action, not away from the action. Training is a very important component of a well-regulated militia.
I want to move on to our next topic here, because I think this is a very important topic. It deals with your business, my business. It deals with the media. We now know that Cambridge Analytica may have had Facebook data from 87 million people during the last presidential election. This matters as we head into the midterms of this year. Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO and creator of Facebook, at the time of the election, said he did not feel that the election outcome was driven by Facebook. But since then, we have found out that Russians had fake Facebook accounts, were targeting Hillary Clinton voters, and we now know that Cambridge Analytica had access to 87 million people's information on Facebook. And Mark Zuckerberg is now apologetic, says he should have done more, he made a mistake, and, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting world, because we learned that in the last election cycle, 2016, over 60% of the people got their news from Facebook. Well, if you have a company like Cambridge Analytica having access to 87 million people's personal information, you can sway an election pretty easily.
The only thing that bothers me is we are, our mentality has dropped. It's very rarely discussed. Our population is not as smart as it once was. When I was a teenager, I went into a movie theater and saw an Ingrid Bergman film, fell madly in love with her, staggered as a teenager smitten with a beautiful woman to a bookstore next door. And I said, "Do you have a book in whatever language that teaches her whatever language she speaks?" I pointed to the marquee outside his door. And he said, "Well, we have, she's Swedish, and we have Hugo's Swedish Simplified for $2.50. I only had $2. I said, "Do you have anything similar, cheaper?" He said, "Yes, we do. We have Hugo's Norwegian Simplified for $1.50. The two languages are very similar." Well, can you imagine a conversation like that today where a bookstore clerk would know what country Ingrid Bergman is from and would know that her language, Swedish, bears a startling resemblance to Norwegian, which is cheaper, and I could afford it. We're not as smart as we were, so I have a hard time demonizing those who are teaching great numbers of people about candidates. Isn't the other side free to do the same thing? Explain that to me. Only one side has the goods. But once they start using the goods, doesn't that invite the other side to stand up and speak out?
Well, I think what we have gotten here, and this has turned into a great discussion since 2016, there are three types of news in this world. There is news, there is gossip, and there is tabloid. And the news, they try to get it right. It's the best discernible version of the truth at the time. And if you make a mistake, you go back and say you made the mistake. Gossip can be true, but it's usually not important information. Tabloid is you intentionally mislead people knowing that it's going to have an outcome. We have had opinion pieces for years. But when you call it news, when you call an opinion piece news, that's where we lose it. You know, during the last election, I don't want to pick on Fox News because I could say the same thing for MSNBC, but Sean Hannity is not news. That's an opinion-based show. Now, he would tell you it's an opinion-based show, but because it's on a news channel, there are people who do consider that to be news. There are people who consider Rachel Maddow news. Do they use the news? Yes. But is it opinion? Of course it is.
Maybe you can enrich my professional life, Scott, by giving me an example of the evil here. If one occurs to you, please interrupt and hold my hand over the air and guide me through it. I'm really, I can't get enraged about what I've heard. I think Zuckerberg blundered his way into this and didn't think it through and figured the only kind of lightning that strikes him is good lightning. He's like a teenage billionaire, right? Almost. So I understand how he blundered into that error, which is egregious. But I don't. I couldn't tell any horror stories about it. If you can, I wish you would enrich me by telling one.
Well, I think there were many during the election. I do remember stories. The Hillary Clinton's going to go to jail, showing pictures of her behind bars. When she passed out at 9/11, she had a brain tumor. Her pant leg was bunched up at one of the debates, and somebody said she had a catheter in. I mean, this is Facebook, and people think that's true.
Well, I am admittedly a stark raving enthusiast for Sean Hannity. I think he's really hit the sweet spot in America's mentality. And if you, I happen to watch him every night because my show ends when his begins. So I rush from my home studio. I mean, I have a studio in our home. To the bedroom to watch Sean. And what he is doing now, it is amazing. You say it's not news, but he's the only one connecting the dots, and that is an ongoing horror story. It's like a serial. We, on Saturday afternoon, we used to go and watch Flash Gordon, Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, and every Saturday it would be more exciting. It was great fiction. And this is what Sean's show sounds like, but it is not fiction. It is true, and nobody stands up and says, come and debate your facts. They are trash. They are good. Nobody is attacking what he says. They're just attacking him because he says it. Does that jibe with your impression, or am I out here on the limb all alone?
Well, I think that, I think Sean Hannity, I don't, there are a lot of websites and a lot of news programs that would say that what he says is not fact, that it is opinion. And I think there is some truth to that. I mean, Sean Hannity himself has said he's friends with the president. I don't think you can be friends with somebody who, and keep an objective point of view. I think if you're, that's why they, you know, in the army, you go to the brig if you fraternize with the enemy. Because it's tough to shoot somebody who you're friendly with.
Well, isn't that really a step toward honesty when you admit that I'm in this man's back pocket? I am folded up and cozy in his back pocket. He's my boy, and I don't like you trashing my boy, so I'm going to trash those who are trashing my boy. There's a certain element of honesty. You're absolutely right. Sean is proud of his personal connection with Donald Trump, makes no effort to hide it. He doesn't do little innocent stories that sound like he's balancing in the name of fairness. And let me just give you one example of what I'm talking about. You say his critics say that what he does is not news. All right, one of the things he says five times every night is Hillary Clinton was exonerated before she was investigated. Now, I'm sorry, he's got the FBI. He wins that one. In the replay, you see both feet were on the playing field when he caught the pass. So you, how about a little credit to Sean Hannity?
Well, see, but that... Sean is very successful. I give him that. He is popular. I give him that. But I think he goes to the old adage of preaching to the choir. If I know that my audience wants this, and I give it to them, they're going to keep coming back, and they're going to keep growing. But it doesn't necessarily mean that I am unbiased, that I am down the center. Because I think one of the problems is I give him every credit in the world for being successful. I think he is that. But I think he makes no attempt to be objective. And I think that's the problem, because I think the people who watch his show say, go get him, Sean. I think you're right. Go get him. And I'm not sure that you should be saying that to a news person. Go get him.
The most famous lawyer in America in the early 1960s was a man named Louis Neisser. He was Elizabeth Taylor's attorney, and he wrote a book about six of his famous cases. My Life in Court, I think, was the title of Louis Neisser's book. He caused a lot of controversy because he refused to defend communists. And he said, I understand my critics, but they are wrong. It would be catastrophic if every lawyer refused to defend communists. But there are plenty of lawyers willing and eager to defend communists or anybody else. As long as that situation obtains, I am free to express my core values and not carry water for dictatorship. So Sean is a little bit that way himself. It'd be catastrophic if he were the only voice and he were in the president's back pocket. There are many voices. You've quoted them now, from Dennis Kucinich all the way to Rachel Maddow. Great old bunch of boys and girls. They keep it. They keep Sean from being a danger. They keep Sean from being an undesirable on the media scene. He has his propensity. He enjoys it. There are many, many others who attack him. Blessed be the name of the game. As long as all the voices are not in lockstep obeying some powerful big brother.
I'll tell you, and here, this is from 4 hours ago. This is a good way to transition here. 4 hours ago, our president tweeted, the fake news Washington Post, Amazon's chief lobbyist, has another of many phony headlines, Trump defiant as China adds trade penalties. Wrong should read, Trump defiant as U.S. adds trade penalties will end barriers and massive IP theft. Typically bad reporting. Okay, that's a criticism of the Washington Post, Jeff Bezos, and the owner, and Amazon. Now, I give you exactly what you just said. Sean Hannity's voice can be loud. He will face his critics. That's fine. But the president doesn't like the Washington Post, clearly. Are they allowed to do that? Because in his mind, he doesn't think so.
Well, is there anything against... I am kind of thrilled to have a president unafraid to talk back, hidebound by some mythical, irrelevant ethic that says you should simply smile and bite the bullet and answer with gentility. Trump is not that kind of person. Where the nation had a good look at him, don't. This is not England, where the campaign only lasts for 3 weeks. Campaigns here last forever. The public knew what it was buying when they voted for Trump. And I don't think I'm the only one who is thrilled to see a public figure lash back and clash back against unfair reporting that makes him look bad. He has his right to self-defense. That's all he's doing.
Well, but the problem is, he can say whatever he wants. We do have free speech in this country. But he's attacking them because he doesn't like their stories. He's not attacking them on the truth of their stories. He's attacking them on making him look negative. I've never heard the president tweet on anything that made him look positive, and I've never heard the president tweet on any other story that had nothing to do with him. It's very egocentric in a way, because if the story is negative to him, he doesn't like it, he doesn't like the news organization, doesn't matter if it's true or not. That's the problem. Every president since time in memoriam has had negative stories written about them, and sometimes they're true and sometimes they're not. But, you know, that's the name of the game. That's what you sign up for. And unfortunately, this is about, I like Sean Hannity, Sean's the best, he's tweeted stuff like that over and over, because there's a favorable news coverage there. He doesn't like the Washington Post, he doesn't like Jeff Bezos, because it's unfavorable. What we need, criticize something when it's a lie. I'm all for that. But don't criticize it just because you don't like it.
Well, less than 4 hours ago, I was watching CNN, which I should do a lot more often, because I'm a Fox man, and the only time I get to CNN is when I'm just interrupted or I just happen stanchly find my channel to be CNN. And the criticism, the nature of their criticism is so pitiful and so petty that is what I'm against. Not Trump, but the nature, the form of Trump's critics. That sends me to the ramparts with a broken bourbon bottle. High school, the Japanese, at least, were smart enough to put it into a proverb. The Japanese said, and they, famous saying in Japan, the nail that stands out shall be smashed flat. And I remember being part of cabals against guys who were more popular or guys who were better athletes. We wanted to bring them down to our level. That's called something called human nature. But to see a major network like CNN perseverate and go from one, it was like criticizing a restaurant for half an hour because you had to ask the waiter twice for iced tea. That level of condemnation. I say, you deserve what Trump has given you.
Well, I'll counter that with this. In the entire election cycle, last time, presidential, which went on forever, as you say, I agree with that. Did you ever see one positive Hillary Clinton story on Fox News? One? Anything that related her in a good light?
Scott, as a friend of yours, instead of an adversary, let me warn you not to go there. If you, a great showman named Mike Todd, once married to Elizabeth Taylor, said, never take the audience backstage. That we have to violate that. We've got to go backstage. It started out with Fox being unabashedly 100% the way you're characterizing them, conservative. But the way it has transmogrified, not evolved, they have transmogrified into a fair network. So they got CNN and MSNBC slavishly trashing the president and his administration, whereas Fox day by day converts still more from a pro-conservative, pro-Trump voice over to a fair, balanced voice. I lament that. I say if they're going to gang up and be petty and criticizing him, give me the old Fox, not the new Fox.
Well, I think it's interesting because I think as time goes on, what has happened is Our government is in gridlock because of these cable news channels, and I'm not laying it all on Fox, because as I started out by saying, MSNBC is clearly to the liberal side of things. Fox is clearly to the conservative side of things, but now everybody who's a representative, everybody who's a senator, is scared to death to do anything across the aisle because they're afraid they're going to be hammered on these networks, and they will be. And that is very unfortunate. I don't know why that happens. I think that's a sad thing. Compromise is gone. And all of a sudden, Fox employed our governor, John Kasich, at one point. Employed him. They loved him. They don't love him so much anymore, now that they think he's running for president up in New Hampshire the other day.
I think John Kasich is an outstanding candidate, an outstanding public servant. I could easily back him, but I prefer Donald Trump. I'm just one of them. And I'm sorry that I think your side, or the side that you're espousing at the moment, is winning the battle. Apparently, if everybody felt like I did, CNN would change its ways after 8 minutes of what I heard today. It's petty. I mean, when the motive is not to spread news, go ahead and laugh at my hometown newspaper, the Greensboro Daily News, North Carolina. As a 10-year-old boy, when I would pick that paper up outside our front door, I knew one thing. The most important story in the world would be visible top of page one. The second most important story would still probably be featured above the fold on page one. And the totality of 11 stories would be the 11 stories the editors felt were the most important. The most important local stories would be front page of the local section. Honesty, journalism, spreading important news, and turning your back on what you quite correctly said. How did you? I'm going to steal that from you on the air. You said there's news, there's gossip, and there's tabloid, right?
Right.
Give me the Greensboro Daily News only had news. They had no agenda to bring in. Oh, they had editorials, but 10-year-old boys don't like editorials. I didn't follow that much, but I knew the news was going to be important. I was in Sweden not long ago, watched a newscast. Same thing. Nothing but the most important story was the lead story. Second most important story was the second lead. Third, the third lead, and so on. I remember journalism, but Scott, not everybody does. I'm not a young man, and I'm sorry you have to be of a certain age to remember the quality of journalism that I miss.
Well, here's something. I don't pick a side. I truly don't. But here's something that is interesting. And yes, you are 100% correct that CNN does have commentators, I guess is what they call them now, who hammer the president. So does MSNBC. Fox has fewer of them. But when Obama was president, it was the exact reverse. But the problem is, and I said this going in, I don't tell people how I vote because I am in the news business. And I have Democrats on, I have Republicans on. In the last election cycle, I had Madeleine Albright on and Al Franken, but I also had Roger Stone and Juanita Broderick and Phyllis Schlafly. You know, you cover both sides. But the problem is that a story is a story. And what has happened now is there are so many people out there trying to intentionally mislead tabloid that here's what happens. And I'm going to go back to the days of Ronald Reagan. Iran-Contra was a news story. Whether you liked it or believed it, whatever, it's a news story. If you didn't cover it, you were not news. So if you covered Iran-Contra, and you told what happened that day, that was okay. But here's what would happen today. If you covered Iran-Contra, somebody on a cable channel who loved President Reagan would say, the fact that you even covered that means you're anti-Reagan, because that story makes him look bad. Now, that's tabloid, because that was not the intention of promoting that story. That was not the intention of airing that story. And that's how news people get bombarded by tabloid people. It's you're with us or you're against us. This isn't the Wild West.
No, I think you make an excellent point. Not everybody on my side, not every Trump supporter is an angel or kissed by tongues of virtuous flame. I make no such claim. But I think we're an awful lot better than the opposition that is trying to bring Trump down. The shame of it all is they are proving day by day what Adolf Hitler proved. Adolf Hitler hated Jews more than he loved Germans. When the Soviet army broke through and shattered the Nazi defenses inside the Soviet Union, Hitler ordered the priority to go to not the army, not to get supplies and rearmaments of the German troops. His priority was to get Jews out of concentration camps that were too close to Soviet liberators and move them farther west, deeper into Germany, so they could not be liberated by the Red Army, which was surging. So he hated Jews more than he loved Germans. I can give me an hour, any hour, on CNN or MSNBC, and I can prove to you, stomp down, prove that their team, their mindset proves that they hate Trump more than they love America.
I don't know. That's an interesting thing. Final question, Barry. Time always goes so fast with you. Is John Kasich going to run for president?
I hope so.
You think so?
I hope so. He's smart. He's intelligent. I can't fault him on any quality. But, once Napoleon saw one of his prisoners of war, they were being rounded up, and one of them looked extremely depressed, and Napoleon went up to him and said, come on, my man, get up and smile. It's no disgrace to be defeated by my army. It is no disgrace to be beaten by Donald Trump. He is a once-in-a-lifetime phenomenon. You can use him to make America better, or you can implacably oppose him and prove that you hate him more than you love America.
Barry Farber, one of my favorite guests. It always goes by so quickly. And when I was on your show about 3 years ago, Barry, that was a pleasure. So I always appreciate your invitations to me, and I always appreciate you accepting my invitations to you. You're one of the
now
best.
Now that I know that, one will be forthcoming. Check with your people. When my producer gets back on Monday, such an invitation will be forthcoming. And forgive me for blackmailing you in public, but I would love to have you on.
I will accept. Thank you, Barry.
Thank you, Scott. Take care.
Bye-bye. We're coming back with Jody Serling. Stay tuned.
D3. The WWGH Radio prize policy is as follows. You have 10 days from